Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Pastor Bob Enyard of Denver Bible Church. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
Fred, it's so good to be in the studio talking about science, about the creation evolution debate. Today we're going to start with this magazine called Answers.
Answers Magazine, and that's published by Answers in Genesis.
And it's current through March of 2011. And Fred, if we could start with a really neat article in here on intermittent wipers. Not really, right? We're going to be talking about eyelids.
Eyelids, that's right. And there's a recent movie that came out about a guy who invented the intermittent wiper. And he based on the motion, the blinking of the eye.
Mm-hmm. Robert Kearns, great movie. And we saw it too with our family. Really neat. Before we talk about the movie, a little bit about the eye and the way our eye blinks. Fred, an average human being, their eye will blink 500 million times. Effortlessly, for the most part.
For the duration of the average lifespan, right?
Yeah, that's right. And when it blinks, there's a saline washer function, a fluid that moistens and protects the outer cornea of the eye. It removes dust, and there are other protective features of our eye. In fact, our eyebrows are like umbrellas. Since reading this article, I've thought about that. Being out in the sun, we took our kids tubing recently near Winter Park, and that sun, but your eyebrows help to shade your eye from that most harsh glare of the sun.
That's amazing. Another aspect of design I wasn't aware of until you just mentioned that.
Yeah, and then we have recessed eyeball sockets, and unlike aliens on Star Trek, you know, those poor guys, they always have these bulging eyes. And God recessed our eyes to protect them. Fred, how about this guy, Robert Kearns? He invented the idea of intermittent wipers. What was that story about?
Well, I think he had one working eye, right? He had an eye, I can't remember.
A good eye and a bad eye.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened to him, but anyways, he was driving his car down the street, and it was raining, and he had two settings for his wipers, and this is, I think, back in the early 60s.
Yeah, and there was regular and fast.
Yeah, basically regular, maybe even slow and fast. Mm. And it wasn't quite the speed he needed for the amount of rain that was coming down, and having just one eye, he started thinking, you know, our eyes work pretty amazing with this blinking motion and the process you just described.
Yeah.
And he thought, well, what if we had a intermittent wipe, because that's kind of what our blinking does. We don't even think about when we blink. We can make ourselves blink if we want, but it's kind of an automatic process,
yeah,
right?
It is interesting because scientists have not yet figured out what part of our brain controls our blinking, and it's an automatic system. We can override it. And the automatic nature of it, if we're somewhere where it's a little dusty or too humid or too dry or whatever, our eye just adjusts in such a brilliant way. And so he realized that because he had one eye, and that made it more difficult to see. And so he thought, what if we could control the wipers to go intermittent?
Yeah, so he invented the intermittent wiper and presented it to the Ford Company, I believe, as the first major car manufacturer that he presented it to.
He was an electronics instructor at a local college.
That's right.
And so he knew about electronics, but it wasn't like today with our microprocessors and all.
And so when he presented his invention to the Ford Motor Company, at first they thought there was some trick or some gimmick he was doing, because their engineers up to that point had not been able to.
They couldn't figure out how to do it. And we think today, how could anything be more simple than doing an intermittent wiper? But because he was an electronics instructor, he assembled some very basic parts in a way they had never before been assembled, and he accomplished it. It was a design and engineering feat.
That's right. And again, he got this idea from the ultimate engineer who designed our eyes. And so then the rest of the story is about his lawsuits against the various car manufacturers because they ended up using his invention, but they didn't give him any credit for it.
Yeah, he got a patent in, I think, 1964, and eventually he fought that patent. He fought it in court because they would not honor it, which is the normal way it works, unfortunately. Large corporations, because we don't have flogging in our criminal justice system, large corporations don't care because they can outlast you. You're going to die in 30 years. They're not. They have billions of dollars. You don't. They have a team of lawyers. You don't. So they just don't care. Well, this guy, he was like Ken Scott. He just was tenacious. He didn't give up. And after 20 years or so of fighting, he won tens of millions of dollars in awards from the judicial system.
That's right. So what's your opinion of patents, Bob?
God says, thou shalt not steal. And Fred, that has got to include intellectual property rights. Would you think so? I know some people try to justify when they copy software like Microsoft Word. They don't want to pay for it, so they just try to download it for free and steal it.
And they try to justify it, but I agree with you. That would be stealing.
Yeah, or music or movies. You're stealing. I mean, why not steal somebody's signature and just write it on a check? Or why not steal the design of a $20 bill and print $20 bills, counterfeiting? There's intellectual property that people have a right to. And when you take that from them without paying them their stated price, then you are robbing them of part of the market that they have created by their ingenuity.
That's right. That's a great point, Bob.
Yeah, our patent system is broken because the punishment, there's too much inequality since we don't care about God's way of doing things. We've got our lawyer's way of doing things. So, Fred, can we talk a bit about the eye, though? Because the blinking of the eye, just imagine if your eye evolved and the blinking section of your brain hadn't. Just right there, you'd have quite the challenge.
Well, it's funny when we talk about the eye. I mean, this is, in retrospect, if you compare it to other features of the eye, this sounds pretty simple, right? But we don't even know how it works. This is one component of the eye. You've already mentioned others, the eyebrows. I have a friend who maybe has one umbrella. But but anyways, I mean, we've talked about the eye quite a bit on this show. We, mm-hmm. you know, we've talked about even Darwin had problems with explaining the eye.
Yeah, and Darwin ultimately said he believed, of course, he believed it could evolve step by step. But do you have that quote? He said, and then I'd like to, when we read this quote, we need to remember that ultimately Darwin believed that the eye did evolve, and he said it could happen because it could go step by step in little stages. But if you could show that it can't go in little stages, then Darwin's initial statement is exactly true. What was that?
Well, here's what Darwin said. He said, to suppose that the eye, with all its inimitable contrivances for adjusting the focus to different distances, for admitting different amounts of light, and for the correction of spherical and chromatic aberration, could have been formed by natural selection, seems, I freely confess, absurd to the highest degree.
Absurd to the highest degree, that all that sophistication of the human eye could have happened just step by step by accidental changes that were selected by nature. He says it seems absurd.
And then he goes on to say that he believes it can happen step by step.
Yeah, that it happens.
Because he's an evolutionist.
Yeah, so I think we should talk about that a little bit. And right now, he knows that there is a creator right now.
He does know that now, yes.
Charles Darwin knows that.
He's a creationist.
Well, yeah, he knows there's a creator. But when you think of a vision system, I took artificial intelligence at Arizona State University, and we studied about vision systems. And what's interesting is your brain, your mind, is perceiving the images around you. And that doesn't happen in your eyeball. That happens in the vision center of your brain. So that's where you see. You don't see in your eyeball. Your eyeball is like the lens that transmits the photons that collect in your eye. They get transmitted back to your vision system. And back there, Fred, I think people, when they think about how our eyes work, for one, I don't think people think about it much. So the fact that it evolved, oh, sure, it could evolve. But if they do think about it for the first moment, their first moment's thought will be wrong. They somehow think that in your brain is a screen and there's a projector and it's projecting what you're seeing in your brain so your brain can see what you're looking at. That there is no projector. There's no screen. Your brain is receiving chemical, electrical signals, probably a billion of them per second, all packaged up, encoded. You know how we have in computers, don't we have encoding?
Oh, absolutely.
And decoding information? And that, you need symbolic logic to do that.
Yeah, that's right. So you're saying that the eye itself is like a medium that encodes a certain signal and then it's decoded by the brain.
It's decoded. And to encode information and decode information, that's a symbolic logic function. You're an engineer. You worked in the adult stem cell field. You're an engineer currently. You guys do that all the time, but none of the laws of physics have symbolic logic functions. There is not one ever discovered. The laws of physics don't deal in symbolic logic.
And well, this is kind of related to the information argument, right?
Yeah.
And the secular scientists will say that there's just matter and energy. Well, so if you imagine, say, you design one of these artificial intelligent robots that maybe you guys looked at. So you've got the matter, you've got the energy, like the power supply. But what makes the thing do what it's going to, you know, say it plays the piano or it cleans your car for you. I don't know, whatever it is. How does it know to do that? Is matter and energy going to be sufficient to make that happen?
No, let's say it vacuums your living room.
Okay.
Because some robots are designed to do that.
Oh, okay.
They don't do it very efficiently, but they're designed to do that. Eventually, they'll probably be good at it. But there's information there. Information, and that information is different than matter or energy.
That's
it's a
right.
different kind of thing.
This thing will not vacuum the floor without that information programmed in to the robot.
Yeah, and Einstein's gulf, he talked about this impassable gulf from matter to ideas.
Oh, this wasn't a lake behind his house?
No, right. And so our eyes are like a camera's lens, and they pass information, but the information is encoded. They're not passing the photons back to your brain. The photons are hitting rods and cones, and they're sending these electrical chemical signals that hit your brain like a waterfall, probably a billion bits of information per second. And if you were trying to look at it, it looked like static on your TV screen. And then your brain has to decode all that information and help you understand in a three-dimensional reconstruction of what's around you and what you're looking at, maybe far, far away up in the sky and out in space. And your brain reassembles this information, and then you have the sense of seeing. You feel like you're seeing.
Well, I have a question.
Yeah.
So there's this friend of yours. His name is Richard Dawkins.
Oh, yeah. Richard Dawkins.
He said that the eye is wired backwards.
What?
What's up with that?
Well, yeah. Now that when engineers look at the eye, their first thought is, well, look at that. It's backwards. And they thought Richard Dawkins is well known for saying there can't be a creator because if there was, he would never wire the eye backward. Now, Fred, haven't engineers and anatomists found the most extraordinary advantages of the human eye? And I'm not talking about creationists or Christians. I'm talking about just secular scientists publishing in referee journals the most phenomenal benefits for the human eye being wired backwards, as Richard Dawkins calls it.
That's right. So secular scientists, not creationists, have published this data. So, Bob, you want to give us some examples?
Well, one big one is that when you see a bright flash of light, the cells in your eye, it kills them. They die. And in order for them to be regenerated, they need a rich blood supply. And so if our eyes were not wired backwards, as Richard Dawkins says, then that blood supply, all that network of vessels, would be in front of our eyes, and they would cloud our vision. And so if you have a creature that lives under the sea, they don't often turn around and see the sun in the sky. So they
I was going to ask you about the octopus, because isn't their eye wired correctly?
Yeah, right. There are creatures where it doesn't matter because they don't get flashes of bright lights. We do. And have you ever had your photo taken with a flash camera And what happens for the first moment?
Well, I blink.
You blink, and there's like a flash blindness for a couple seconds as we think our eyes are adjusting. Well, those cells are regenerating. The cells are regenerating. There's adjustment also, but the cells are regenerating. And so within seconds, those cells are remade. If we didn't have that rich blood supply, it could take hours or days for those cells to regenerate. Would you like to present the first ever Real Science Friday prediction number one?
Prediction number one?
Yeah, our first ever prediction.
Okay. So that friend of yours I mentioned, Richard Dawkins?
Yeah.
We predict that he will no longer use the eye as a poor design because it's wired backwards.
Yes. We're making that bold prediction. Now, he's well known for this prediction, and it has been parroted by probably a million atheists and evolutionists all over the world.
And many of them do not know what you just said, that a lot of the peer-reviewed secular scientific journals have long refuted this idea that the eye is misdesigned because it's so-called wired backwards.
So here's Real Science Friday prediction number one, that Richard Dawkins will never again make the claim that the eye is wired backwards.
That sounds good. I could actually make another prediction, but we won't count this one because it's like kind of hollow.
Yeah.
That evolutionists will still claim that other things are poorly designed.
Oh, yeah, I bet so. Well, you know, it's dangerous to second guess the creator. That's just dangerous because he's brilliant. And so, but they will say things are poorly designed, right?
They will. In fact, on my forum at evolutionfairytale.com.
Now, this is your website.
Yes.
Evolutionfairytale.com.
Yes, and there's a forum that has, you know, a very active discussion and, you know, on different topics. And one of them had to do with design, and this one guy, he goes by the name of Squawk. You know, people come up with different pseudonyms.
Yeah.
Squawk.
That's his user ID.
Kind of like, I don't know, like a ham radio, you think, or a bird, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
So anyways, he came up with some suggestions for bad design. One of them was the seal.
A seal? Like a presidential seal?
Yeah.
Like the seal of a king in the Bible?
No, it wasn't. It's that, you know, the black things that find them on rocks a lot of times, sunbathing.
Yeah, in Northern California, Southern, up in Alaska. He said a seal is a bad design?
Yeah, and he wasn't real clear why it was a bad design other than maybe that it's because it's not suited for land or water.
Oh, brother.
Which
now,
is silly. Hey,
Fred, by his own worldview, he believes they've survived for millions of years. In very harsh conditions. No
That's right.
Less.
I just don't think he likes seals. And, you know, for every person who doesn't like a seal and says he's badly designed,
right,
you're going to have a seal lover who says it's the best design in the world.
Yeah,
it's
right.
In the eye of the beholder. But,
right,
you know, we've had on this show how many countless times have we pointed out where man has reverse engineered some incredible design of God's. And we don't even get close to the compression, the storage. You
efficiency.
Could just go on and on.
Yeah.
We don't even get even
right
in the vicinity of close.
No. And so seals being badly designed, if we have vehicles, well, maybe the military has vehicles, designed to operate on land and in water. That's hard to do because there's such different environments. And so such a vehicle is not well designed for traveling on land or in water, but it's both. And so when God makes a creature that could live on the land and in the water, that's a pretty extraordinary design, an engineering accomplishment. And according to this Squawk, he thinks they've existed for millions of years. How could they possibly be poorly designed?
That's right. And, you know, actually, man has invented something that can run on water and land, the Batmobile.
That's right.
So they can make things up, and, you know, it's a pretty good invention.
Yeah. Did he give any other examples of things? And I'd like to get back to the eye a little bit more, but anything else?
Well, yeah, he did. He also said that bones were a bad design, and that's a good—
Bones? You mean the doctor on Star Trek?
No, not the guy on Star Trek.
Oh, you mean our bones.
Our bones.
Our skeleton.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he thinks humans are a bad design, too, you know, and the guy in Star Trek. But
right.
So we just talked about bones, I don't know, maybe a couple shows ago, about how it has two amazing qualities of hardness, which it comes from the calcium. And then at the same time, it's very elastic, which comes from the collagen. So these two chemicals, and actually there's more involved in a bone, of course.
Well, they are so strong, given their weight and their size, they're in nature, bones are extraordinarily strong. They have tremendous strength. And like you just said, they're flexible. If they weren't flexible, your bones would be rigid and break far more often
than
they do. And if they weren't strong, your body would be a plop of Jell-O on the floor.
Yeah, next time you eat a chicken leg, just save the bone, put it in vinegar for a week, which will dissolve the calcium, and that thing's going to be awfully flexible and bendy. It's kind of neat, you know, like those little things you can twist up. And...
Yeah, so you take a bone, and maybe you can find a longer bone from a turkey, I don't know.
There you go.
And soak it in vinegar for a week, and that will dissolve, the acid, I think, will dissolve the calcium.
That's right. And then you can tie that thing in knots.
You could tie it in a knot. That's how flexible it is. Or you could take a bone and put it on your barbecue, on your grill, and you'll do the reverse. And you'll see how brittle it becomes as you burn off the collagen?
Collagen, yeah. Yep.
You burn off the collagen, and then that bone, you tap it on your kitchen table, and it'll shatter. So God designed our bones for strength, to be lightweight, and to be flexible. And these are all meeting design requirements of a human being.
Yeah, and he calls it a bad design, and I challenged him, you know, man has tried to reverse engineer the bone. Well, good luck. Try to make it as efficient as the bone designed by the creator. He won't even come close.
And Fred, these guys who think then that birds evolved from reptiles, and so they evolved flight, well, for a bird to fly, it needs a very strong skeleton, but it'd be too heavy. So its bones have got to be hollow.
The bones are hollow.
Hollow.
Birds.
So how do you get to that point? You've evolved wings. You're all set to go. But you can't get off the ground because you're too heavy. So now it's going to take how many, a million years?
Or the Atkins diet?
You've got to evolve hollow bones. How does that even begin? I mean, these are such absurdities. Darwin was right when he used the word absurd. So, Fred, there's no projector and there's no screen inside your brain. So there's no image being projected in your brain for the rest of your brain to look at. So your brain is interpreting data, packets of data that are, there's an encoding and a decoding of symbolic logic and information. And Fred, think about it. You got the original bug that doesn't know there's any such thing as light, right? It has no eyes before it evolved a vision system. Now it has to start taking information that would be like a million bits per second of changing information, and it has to begin to interpret it, which is just absurd in every conceivable way. And I guess it would start in black and white.
I was going to say, how do we see color?
Color? I mean, if you've got a black and white system, say a computer or a TV screen, and you say, you know, we're going to mutate this thing and make it see in color. It's just, it's inconceivable. People who believe this stuff have not thought carefully about it for a long time, or they're the most gullible people who've ever lived.
Well, there was a huge step of evolution from the 50s till now because everybody back then saw in black and white.
That's true. Yeah. And how about, remember the trochlea challenge?
Oh, yeah, the trochlea challenge. I actually mentioned it to the squawk guy because he concluded in his post, if there is a God, he designed things to look like evolution. And so my reply to that was your trochlea challenge, which is just an excellent rebuttal to anybody who says that things, you know, that anything evolved. This is a great tool. I highly recommend it. It's out on kgov.com. You can go there and just type in trochlea challenge, T-R-O-C-H-L-E-A.
And P.Z. Myers, we call it the P.Z. Myers trochlea challenge because P.Z. Myers, he's one of the world's most famous evolutionists. And in his daily blog, Fred, he took a swipe at you and me. He just didn't like us in our Real Science Friday.
Shocker there.
Yeah, so we shot back, and a lot of it was ad hominem. So we shot back with the P.Z. Myers Trochlea Challenge, and please go to Real Science Friday at our website, kgov.com. Click on Real Science Friday, and you'll see the P.Z. Myers Trochlea Challenge. Now, a trochlea is a sling for a muscle on the eye. Now, you need the whole eye to evolve. Okay, that's pretty difficult. Not only the intermittent blinking and all. And then you need the eye to be able to pull in different directions so you can look around easily without turning your head all the time. And so there are muscles all around it, and there's a superior oblique muscle at the top that it wants to be able to pull your eye over, your right eye over to the left, but there's no room there for that muscle to be anchored. So there's a sling, and the muscle, which is a thick band, like a belt, narrows to a cord, and it goes through the sling, and it gets rerouted back to the back of the eye. And that's how... that's how so your eye is able to turn in that direction.
Part of it is held in place by this sling. So how does evolution explain that as step by step? That has to be there from the beginning. There's no way you can explain that with natural selection
and mistakes
in the DNA.
Right. It's like a pulley system. It's like a pulley system where you have a cord going through a pulley and it's accomplishing some function. Well, that system is a unit. It's not going to help if you have just the pulley but without the cord, or just the cord without the pulley, or if you have the pulley and the cord but they're not attached to anything, or they're attached to things that don't need to be pulled anywhere, none of those combinations will help give a survival advantage. The whole package is a unit, and so the trochlea challenge is a challenge to P.Z. Myers and every evolutionist, where we say, just at a high level, we're not asking you for details of how this did evolve. We're saying at a very broad level, how could this evolve?
Well, I think I know how.
But,
well, you said it was the superior oblique.
Yeah.
I think it evolved from the inferior oblique.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, let's make up a story, yeah. And the storytelling will be sufficient. Fred, I don't know how to put a man on Mars, but I know how to create an algorithm for how to do it. Like, I can't actually do it. Like, an evolutionist would say, well, we can't see it happening in front of us because it happens too slowly. Okay, I can't put a man on Mars, but I could write an algorithm for explaining how theoretically it would be accomplished.
So you could provide the information?
Yeah, at a high level. Yeah. You know, you need some kind of a ship that could keep people alive in space in our solar system. It needs to leave Earth's gravity. It needs to be navigable. It needs to have enough oxygen and food and all, and climate control. It needs to be able to get to the right place where Mars is at the right time. It needs to be able to land on Mars. So I could do all that, and I could say, here's how it could be done if we could pull it off. Well, we're still waiting for the evolutionist to answer the trochlea challenge.
Yeah, again, I encourage the audience to go out and, again, look at this image, this picture that is on the website.
It's a great drawing, isn't it?
It is.
And we commissioned this drawing, and it's a beautiful picture of the eye. In fact, you know what I hope? Google, they have, when you Google something, they'll show images. And somehow we need to get this image recognized by Google.
Yeah, it'd be great to get that recognized. I'm not sure how that happens.
Yeah, we need people to link from their websites to the trochlea drawing.
Definitely.
And that might help do it.
Hey, Bob, so you've got a science package I'm looking at right here.
I do. Thanks, Fred. It's the Intelligent Design Collection, 3 fabulous DVDs. Here at Bob and Yurt Live for $49.99. And Fred, on our website, we have the BEL Science Pack, 5 fabulous resources for $100.
It's a great deal, and these videos are awesome.
And we need your help to stay on the air, so please call us 800-8-N-Yurt.